गोपिकाकांत राधाकांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। टेक्स्ट 48 reading this 47 purport?
I have put some notes on the last part, one paragraph.
Yeah, I think I stopped in the middle of the last paragraph.
Yeah, that's possible. The last note I have is on the second paragraph.
Yeah, I also have that. Let me read it again. As far as prescribed duties are concerned, they can be fitted into three subdivisions, namely routine work, emergency work, and desired activities. Routine work stands for Nitya Karma, emergency work stands for Naimittika Karma, desired activity stands for Kamya Karma. Routine work performed as an obligation in terms of the scriptural injunctions without desire for results is action in the mode of goodness. Work with results becomes the cause of bondage. Therefore, such work is not auspicious. So, auspicious means that which gives liberation. Work with results means carrying out a prescribed activity offered in the Vedas. But I'm attached to the material results that come from that. Everyone has his proprietary right in regard to prescribed duties, but should act without attachment to the result. Such disinterested, obligatory duties doubtlessly lead one to the path of liberation. So, such disinterested here means that one is not interested in the material results. One is interested in obtaining the spiritual results. Obligatory duties, duties which are obligatory, not duties which are optional. Obligatory duties doubtlessly lead one to the path of liberation. Arjuna was therefore advised by the Lord to fight as a matter of duty without attachment to the result. His non-participation in the battle is another side of attachment. Such attachment never leads one to the path of salvation. Any attachment, positive or negative, is cause for bondage. Such attachment never leads one to the path of salvation. So the idea is we should not be attached. Any attachment, positive or negative, is cause for bondage. Inaction is sinful. To not act, to not carry out one's prescribed duty is sinful. Therefore, fighting as a matter of duty was the only auspicious path of salvation for Arjuna. 48. Yogastha kuru karmani sangam tyaktva dhananjaya siddhya siddhyo samo bhutva samatvam yoga uchyate. Perform your duty equipoised, O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity is called yoga. Krishna tells Arjuna that he should act in yoga. And what is that yoga? Yoga means to concentrate the mind upon the Supreme by controlling the ever-disturbing senses. So yoga means to fix the mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But it also involves controlling the ever-disturbing senses. Yoga indriya samyama. Yoga means to bring the senses under control. And who is the Supreme? The Supreme is the Lord. Supreme refers to the Personality of Godhead. not the impersonal absolute, which is just the transcendental rays emanating from him. And because he himself is telling Arjuna to fight, Arjuna has nothing to do with the results of the fight. Gain or victory are Krishna's concern. Arjuna is simply advised to act according to the dictation of Krishna. The following of Krishna's dictation is real yoga, and this is practiced in the process called Krishna consciousness. So this idea is important, that gain or victory are Krishna's concern. Arjuna is simply advised to act according to the dictation of Krishna. So the idea is that Prabhupada later in the third chapter, in his commentary to the third chapter, he gives the example of a cashier in a bank. The cashier may count money that comes in the bank, but the money doesn't belong to him. And let us say, we can just analyze that example. Let us say, on a specific day, less number of people turn in to deposit money, and more people withdraw. And another day, more people deposit money, and less people withdraw. The cashier is not, it's not his job to say, oh, today I got a lot of money, or today I got very little money. It's not his business. That is the business of the proprietor. The person who is running the bank, that's his concern. The cashier's business is to simply do his duty. Whether a lot of money comes, whether a little amount of money comes, that's not his concern. He is getting his monthly payment. That's all. So it is like that. Gain or victory are Krishna's concern. Arjuna is simply advised to act according to the dictation of Krishna. This is what Krishna is telling us. You carry out your varnashrama duty. It's not your business whether you are happy or unhappy. You may be happy, you may be unhappy. But this is the way to. You should simply do what I'm telling you to do. That's all. Whether you are materially successful, you are materially unsuccessful is not your concern. That's my concern. Your concern should be how to attain spiritual progress. How to satisfy the Supreme Lord. The following of Krishna's dictation. So, when we listen to Krishna, then that is real yoga. Just as when a cashier becomes obedient and is unshaken by how much money is coming in, how much money is not coming in. If he becomes attentive to his work, then that's proper. So like that, when we start doing our material duties and spiritual duties the way Krishna wants us to do it, that is called real yoga, that is spiritual progress. And this is practiced in the process called Krishna consciousness. When we engage in Krishna consciousness, that is automatically done. By Krishna consciousness only can one give up the sense of proprietorship. One has to become the servant of Krishna or the servant of the servant of Krishna. That is the right way to discharge duty in Krishna consciousness, which alone can help one to act in yoga. So the idea is, if we become a servant of Krishna, if we become an active servant of Krishna, or better than that, if we become an active servant of advanced servants of Krishna, those who are more advanced than us, then we give up the sense of proprietorship, which means we think it's my job, it's my business. Material happiness, material distress are very important to me. So this conception will go away. This conception will go away. Therefore, to serve Krishna's devotees is the first element of Krishna consciousness. It's the eternal foundation of spiritual practice. This is the first element to serve devotees more advanced than us. No matter how advanced we become, we can never get out of this element in Krishna consciousness. To serve Vaishnavas more advanced than us. The principle is given by Rupa Goswami. Sajati ashaye snigdhe sadhau sankas swatahvare. He says that to associate with Vaishnavas means to submissively associate with Vaishnavas who are like-minded. That means who have similar goals. Sajatiya ashaya. Who have desires of the same category that we have. Similar desires. Like we want to attain love of Godhead. We want to move towards Krishna's pure devotional service. So that category, that's one criteria. Sajatiya ashaya. Snigdhe. And that person who is like-minded, He should be compassionate or kind to us. If he is the type of person who is very humble and he thinks that he is more fallen than us, then that's not of much use for us. So he should be kind upon us. He should understand our situation, have some sympathy, compassion. So that's the second criteria. The third criteria is sadhu sangha swatah vare. That devotee, he should be a more advanced servant of Krishna. He should be more advanced in Krishna consciousness than us, factually. So Rupa Goswami says, we should associate with and serve such servants of Krishna. So even though it is said we should serve Krishna's servants, that is the way to become a proper devotee. A devotee means he is a servant of other devotees. Rupa Goswami specifies, he gives a threefold criteria. That devotee should be more advanced. That devotee should be like-minded, spiritually like-minded. And that devotee should be compassionate or upon us, or be sympathetic to us. So when we do that, then we can give up the sense of proprietorship. That is the way to get out of materialistic consciousness. That is the right way to discharge duty in Krishna consciousness, which alone can help one to act in yoga. So when we do that, that will help us act according to Krishna's dictation, which is yoga. From another point of view also, we need to satisfy Krishna. Arjuna is a Kshatriya, and as such, he is participating in the Varnashrama Dharma institution. It is said in the Vishnu Purana that in the Varnashrama Dharma, the whole aim is to satisfy Vishnu. Varnashrama achara vata purushena parah puman Vishnu raradhyate pantha nanyatattosha karanam. In Varnashrama Dharma, the whole aim is to satisfy Vishnu. So if we participate in Varnashrama Dharma, but if we somehow or other don't become a devotee of Vishnu and satisfy Vishnu, then there's no point. There's no point. No one should satisfy himself, as is the rule in the material world, but one should satisfy Krishna. Krishna is Vishnu. So therefore, when Krishna is saying, fighting is the actual applicable Varnashrama Dharma for you, if you don't do it, I become dissatisfied. Then what is Arjuna doing? Anyway, the Varnashrama system is meant to make Vishnu or Krishna happy. And Krishna is himself personally telling you, this is the way to do it. You do it like this, then I'm happy. This Varnashrama Dharma makes me happy. Running away from battle and trying to become a beggar in the forest, that doesn't make me happy. So he himself is telling that this is what will make me happy. So therefore, Arjuna should just listen to Krishna. He should perform his duty, equipoised. So unless one satisfies Krishna, one cannot correctly observe the principles of Varnashrama Dharma. Indirectly, Arjuna was advised to act as Krishna told him. So indirectly, the message is, Arjuna, just do what I say. Just do what I say. Because ultimately, I am Vishnu. This is the point. Okay, now I'll go to the commentaries. Let me first take up Vishnu Chakravarti. Let me first take up Gita Gham, Prabhupada's Gita Gham. I'll look at from text 44 down. Bhogeshwar je asakto je pagaler moto nijeke hariya boshe ashar shoto shoto. One who is attached to bhoga, enjoyment, and aishwarya, opulence, like a madman, he loses himself, and hundreds of aspirations sit in his heart. Tara nahi bujhe vyavasayatmika buddhi asakti tader shudhu bhukti mukti siddhi. These people, they don't understand the resolute determination to engage in Krishna consciousness. They don't get it. They simply don't get it. And their attachment is simply towards bhukti, mukti, siddhi. Now this is a reference. This is a reference actually to a famous statement by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recorded in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, shakali, ashanto. Krishna bhakta nishkam atayev shanto. The idea is, those who are seeking bhukti, ordinary sense enjoyment, mukti, different types of liberation with a personal desire. I want to be free from material miseries. So it's a personal desire for spiritual satisfaction. Or siddhi, which Prabhupada translates as attaining extraordinary yogic opulences, yogic perfections. So if we have such desires, then Krishna Bhakta Nishkam, Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Ateya Shanta. How does it begin? Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Ashanta. So when one hankers for bhukti, material enjoyment, ordinary material enjoyment, or mukti, spiritual enjoyment, or siddhi, which is yogic perfection, then he remains without peace. There's no peace in such a person. Krishna Bhakta Nishkam, but a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, he is free from all mundane desires. In fact, he's free from any desire other than to satisfy Krishna. Atavayav Shanta. Therefore, he is peaceful. So this expression, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi, comes from that shloka. So Prabhupada is indicating that these people are always without peace because they are attached to Bhukti Mukti Siddhi. Therefore, they are always without peace. Trikuneer Madhye Ved Sattva Rajastama Tahar Upare Utho Tavese Uttama. Let us deal with the three modes of material nature. Rise above them. Then you will become very good. Tokhanei danta bhav bhujibe toma. And then you will be able to get out of the dualities of material existence. Nitya shuddha sattva bhav hove avishkar. And your eternal shuddha sattva, purely spiritual nature will be manifested. Atmavan hoy sada nirjogar nikshep. Je dhane se dhani taha bhagavat prem. One who attains bhagavat prem, love of God, the final perfection of spiritual life, he is truly rich. And that person, he has attained the Supreme Lord. And always he is free from anxiety for gain and preservation. Se preme bhasaman sarvalabh pai kup jal nadi jal jatha jatha hoy. Just as ek kupe hoy ek karjer sadhon nadir jalete hoy ekatre bhajan veder tatparja se ek lakh hoy brahman je hoy se samasta bujhay. So that personality who is floating in pure love of Godhead, he has obtained everything that is meant to be obtained. Just as suppose this is an example straight taken from Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti. Let us say you have the water of a well and the water of a river. The water of a well, this is in medieval India, the water of a well is used for specific purposes. You use it for drinking water, or you don't use it for multiple purposes, specific purposes. But in a river bank, people take that river water and they can use it for so many purposes. So what can be accomplished by a small reservoir of water can be accomplished by a greater body of water. This is with reference to text 46. So naturally, if you have the water of a river, you don't need the water of a well, because you can use it for drinking water. In some places are allocated for drinking water, some places are allocated for bathing water, and so on. So one who understands that the intention or purport of the Vedas is only one, which is to attain love of God, such a person is a Brahmana, and he understands everything. He understands everything. Nija adhikar matra karma kore jao, karma phal nahi chao, ashakti ghujao. Karma phal hetu sada na hoibe tumi, anukul karma jai sei karma bhumi. You only have a right to engage in your karma. Don't desire the fruit that is assigned for that karma. In that way, get rid of your material attachments. don't cause the fruit of your karma to come. Yogi hoye karo karma ashakti rohita karma bhagwane prita. Dhananjay sangat tyaji karma kare jao, siddhi va asiddhi sab paishamma ghusao. Ei sam bhav hoye yoga siddhi naam, sei siddhi labhe purna sarva manashkam. He is saying that become a yogi, get rid of this material desire for enjoying through your prescribed duty, because that activity is pleasing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. Keep on performing such activities without material desires, O Dhananjay, without being partial to material perfection or material imperfection. Such equanimity is known as the highest perfection of yoga. And if you have that, then all of your desires in your mind will be fully satisfied. That is the meaning. Chakravarti. Actually, I'll start with Baladev Vidya Bhushan, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's first commentary, Rasikaranjan, text 44. Bhogeshwariya prasaktana tayabhakrita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadho na vidhiyate yahara bhogo aishwarya sukhe ekanta asakta she avibheki mudha janagraner buddhi samadhi arthat bhagavane ekanishtata lab korena. Samadhi, Bhaktivinoda has taken based on Vishnu Chakravarti to mean fixing the mind exclusively on the Supreme Lord. Chakravarti. Tatascha bhogeshwari yoh prasaktanam daya pushpittaya vacha apakhritam akrishtam cheto yeshante tathate sham samadhischittaikagriyam parameshwarai konmukhatvam tasmin nishayatmika buddhir navidhiyate. So samadhi means that the mind, the consciousness, chitta, mind, is exclusively focused on becoming exclusively, fully favorable towards the Supreme Personality of God. In other words, there's only one desire, the desire to satisfy the Supreme Lord. That is samadhi. Ultimately, this is the meaning of samadhi. Traigunya vishaya veda nistraigunyo bhavarjuna nidvandho nityasattvastho niriyoga khema atmavan. Now here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given an elaborate paraphrase which is important. There's a lot of parallel with Sri Madhvacharya on this. Bhaktivinoda is known to have, he also printed Madhvacharya's first commentary on Bhagavad Gita. Notice parallel. When we come to Madhva's commentaries, two commentaries, we will note similar points made by him there also. Madhva there. Shastra samuhe dui prakar vishay, arthat uddishta vishay or nirdishta vishay. There are two subject matters of the entire range of scriptures. Uddishta and nirdishta. Uddishta. Aim. Aim. Nirdishta. I'll simply call it an objective. Okay, ultimate aim, immediate aim. Let me take it like this. Uddishta means ultimate aim, ultimate subject matter. Nirdishta vishaya means immediate subject matter. Jay vishayati jay shastre charamuddesha tahai tahar uddishta vishaya. That subject matter, which is the ultimate goal, the ultimate objective of Shastra, that is the ultimate subject matter. Je vishay ke nirdesh kuriya uddishta vishay ke lakha kora hai, shei vishayar naam nirdishta vishay. Whereas, that subject matter, having indicated which, the Vedas point towards the ultimate goal, And that is called the immediate subject matter. Immediate subject matter. Arundhati jesthale uddishta vishaye. Sesthale uhar nikat prathame jesthul tarati lakhita. Tahai nirdishta vishaye khai. Just as there is something called Arundhati darshan. Arundhati, as far as I understand, remember, is a heavenly body. It might, is it a planet or is it a... I don't remember. But I know the process is when you show where is Arundhati, first of all you point out to a planet which is near Arundhati. And then you point out, look at that planet, look at that star. First look at that star. So first they point out to a star, then they point out to the heavenly body known as Arundhati. So this is called Arundhati Darshanyaya. So, the Vedas also do that. Veda Sammuhe Nirguna Tattva ke Uddhishta Boliya Lakha Kare Kintu Nirguna Tattva Sahasa Lakhita Khoi Na Boliya Prathame Kon Sadguna Tattva ke Nirdesh Kuriya Thake. The entire body of the Vedas, their ultimate goal, their ultimate aim is to indicate a transcendental subject, a transcendental entity. But since it is not easy to identify or understand a transcendental entity, therefore in the beginning they point out to some material entity or entities. Shejalo sattarajaho tamorupe trigunamayi maya ke prathama drishtikrame ved sakaler vishay bolya bodhay. Therefore it appears that the Vedas are first of all pointing out to threefold maya. Maya characterized by the three modes of material nature. Because the Vedas are talking how to go to the heavenly planets. What is this? Maya. Heavenly planets is inside, it's material. Maya. Attaining heavenly planets is the mode of passion. Attaining the planets higher than the mode, attaining the material planets higher than the heavenly planets are in the mode of goodness. And the Vedas are primarily talking about these things. Like I was mentioning that the Mahabharata, only some 2% of it is talking about purely spiritual subject matters, and close to 98% appear to be talking about all these other subject matters. How to go to the heavenly planets, how to... It talks about the whole universe basically, which is within the three modes of material nature, which is Maya. So the Vedas appear to be promoting some material topics. So it appears that the Vedas are promoting material topics, that their goals appear to be materialistic. Hey Arjun, tumi sei nirdishta vishaye abaddha na thakiya nirgun tattva rup uddishta tattva labh karta nistray gunya sikar kar. My dear Arjuna, you don't be conditioned or bound by this immediate subject matter of the Vedas. Rather, you should accept the process of becoming transcendental, by which you can attain the transcendental subject matter of the Vedas. Vedshastre konasthale rajastamo gunatmak karma, konasthale sattva gunatmak jnan, evam vishesh visheshthale nirguna bhakti udishta hayache. In the Vedic scriptures, in some places, karma, varnashrama dharma is prescribed. Varnashrama dharma can be in the mode of passion, if you are materialistic. Rajastamo gunatmak karma. And there are certain activities which are in the mode of ignorance. And there are also prescribed processes of jnana, jnana yoga, jnana, which are in the mode of goodness. And there are a few places here and there where the process of bhakti yoga, which is totally transcendental. Bhakti yoga is coming from the spiritual world. It is not part of this world. So transcendental bhakti is also presented in the Vedas. Gunamai mana apamana adi dvandva bhavaite rahito hiya nitya sattva arthat amar bhaktaganer sanghe sangha karata jnana karma marge anusandeye yoga kshema anusandhan parityag purva buddhi jog sahakari nistray gunya labh kar. So get out of honor, dishonor and such dualities which are within the three modes of material nature, and be firmly fixed in Nitya Sattva. You will notice this word Nitya Sattva in this shloka, the second half of shloka 45. Nirdvandvo Nitya Sattva Stho. Be situated in Nitya Sattva. And he explains what Nitya Sattva means. Nitya Sattva means in the association of my devotees. So be situated in Nitya Sattva means be situated in the association of my devotees. And be free from anxieties for gain and safety means be free from gain and safety which can be attained to the other processes such as jnana, karma, etc. Give them up and taking advantage of bhakti yoga, become transcendental. Vishnu Chakravarti writes a very important commentary on this. Very important commentary. It's a little bit long, but it's very important. Tvam tu chaturvarga sadhanebhyaha sarvebhyaha virajya kevalam bhakti yogam eva ashayasva ityaha traigunyeti. So now you get out of all the different sadhanas for attaining chaturvarga. Chaturvarga means dharma, artha, kama, moksha. There are four items which are considered to be successes in human life. Fourfold success in human life. So this is called chaturvarga. Dharma means practice of Vedic dharma. Artha means acquiring money, resources, kama, sense gratification, sense enjoyment, moksha, getting free from all material miseries. So there are processes by which you can become dharmic, you can become rich, by which you can get sense gratification, by which you can get liberation. These are sadhanas, means, processes by which you can attain chaturvarga. So Chakravarti explains that Krishna is pointing out through this shloka, you get out of all the processes by which you can attain chaturvarga, and you simply take advantage of bhakti yoga. In other words, he is pointing out the direct process, bhakti mishra karma, karma mishra bhakti, bhakti, this process of increasing bhakti. You take shelter of this. Traigunyas trigunatmikaha karma jnanadyaha prakashyatvena vishaya yeshamte traigunya vishaya vedah swarteshyanch etachya bhumna vipadesha bhavanti iti nyayenoktam. The Vedas deal with the three modes of material nature. That means the Vedas are manifesting the processes of karma, jnana, etc. As their subject matters. When literally the shloka means, if you look at the word for word meanings, you will see traigunyaha. If you look at the word for word meanings. Yeah. And vishayaha, on the subject matter, Vedaha, Vedic literatures. So the meaning appears to be, the Vedas are exclusively dealing with the three modes of material nature from the word meanings, literally. So Chakravarti explains, etachya bhumna vipadesha bhavanti iti nyayena uktam. In when something is predominant, it is named according to what is predominant. For instance, let's take up Neerakshira Nyaya itself. If you are given a cup of milk with a little bit of water, which is more abundant? Milk. So it is called diluted milk. But it is called milk. They don't call it water. They call it milk. Because milk is predominant in that. So that is why it is said, Bhumna Vyapadesha Bhavanti. That Vyapadeshas or labels are given according to what is predominant. So when Krishna says Traigunya Vishaya Veda, that the Vedas have as their subject matter the three modes of material nature, it means that mainly, predominantly, the three modes of material nature are the subject matters. Transcendence is also the subject matter of the Vedas, but they are not predominant. Just like when you say milk, unless you specify it is pure milk, it can refer to diluted milk. Okay. So diluted milk is also milk. But water is not predominant. Similarly, when Krishna is saying that Vedas are dealing with the three modes of material nature, it means primarily they are dealing with three modes of material nature. Prabhupada has incorporated this in the translation. The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. That's where he gets this point mainly from. So that is coming from Chakravarti. Kintu, that's because of this logic, that according to what is predominant, you get a label. Kintu, bhaktirevenam nayati iti, yasya deve para bhaktir, yatha deve tatha guru ityadi shrutayaha. Pancharatradi smrutayascha. Gita Upanishad, Gopala Tapanyadya Upanishadascha, Nirvanam Bhakti Papi, Vishayi Kurvantyeva. However, we should note that there are statements in the scriptures. Like for instance, this scripture, Bhaktirevainam Nayati, Bhaktirevainam Darshayati, Bhaktireva Bhuyasi, quoted by Madhvacharya in his commentary to Vedanta Sutra. He's quoting from a Shruti, I forget the name of that Shruti. It's coming from Shruti, that bhakti is the one which leads the soul to the Supreme Lord. Bhakti is the one which reveals the Supreme Lord to the soul. Bhakti is the greatest. So this is a statement in Shruti. This Shruti appears in full in Govinda Bhashya commentary by Baladeva Vidya Bhushan also. Here is another statement about bhakti. We are talking of pure bhakti. Bhakti means pure bhakti. Yasya deve para bhaktir, yatha deve tatha guru. This is Shvetashvatara Upanishad, last verse. That person who has transcendental bhakti to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as well as similar such bhakti to his spiritual master, to his bona fide spiritual master, to him, all the Vedic subject, all these subject matters which have been spoken in this Upanishad are revealed. Yasya deve para bhaktir, yatha deve tatha guru, tasya ite kathita hi artha prakashante mahatmanah. To one who has implicit faith in Supreme Personality of God and is the bona fide Guru, everything is revealed. So notice bhakti has come here. Then he says, the Smriti scriptures such as the Pancharatra, Upanishads such as the Gita Upanishad, Gopala Tapani Upanishad, etc. They have as their subject matter transcendental bhakti. And they certainly have. He says, Nirgunam Bhaktim Api Vishayi Kurvantyeva. They definitely have made as their subject matter transcendental bhakti. So from this we understand that it is not that the Vedas only deal with the three modes of material nature. But there are also portions here and there which do deal with transcendental bhakti. Vedoktatva Abhave Bhaktehe Apramanyameva Syat. If bhakti is not presented, if transcendental bhakti is not presented in the Veda, then that bhakti would be unauthoritative. In other words, it is not worth following, worth adopting. Unless the Vedas tell you to do something, why should you do it? So if the Vedas are not teaching you to engage in Krishna bhakti, why should you do it? It would become just another bogus thing coming from a human head. So he's saying no. That is not the case. Tatascha Vedokta ye tri guna maya jnana karma vidhayaha tebhya eva nirgato bhava tan na kuru. So the Vedas have taught jnana, the process of jnana, karma. These are in the three modes of material nature. You become free from them. In other words, don't do these activities. Don't enter into the path of karma, into the path of jnana. Ye tu vedokta bhakti vidhayaha tavstu sarvathaivanatishtha. Rather, you take shelter of the rules of bhakti which are spoken in the Vedas. And in every circumstance, in every way, you must engage in these activities. Tat ananushthane shruti smriti puranadi pancharatra vidhim vina aikantiki harer bhaktir utpata yaiva kalpate. Iti doshaha durvarayeva. Now if you don't take shelter of bhakti, the rules and regulations of bhakti as taught in the Vedas, then there is going to be a great defect which is inevitable. What is that defect? The defect is stated by stated in the scripture, which is quoted by Rupa Goswami, and this is a quote from Rupa Goswami's quoting from that scripture. That personality who tries to engage in unflinching devotion to Lord Hari, or rather it says that unflinching devotion to Hari, which is beyond the regulations of Shruti, Smriti, Purana, Pancharatra, etc., that's simply a cause for social disturbance and personal disturbance. It is simply misery. In other words, it should not be done. You should not do devotional service to the Supreme Lord without referring to scriptures. It should be done in accordance with the scriptures. Tena sagunanam gunatitanam api vedanam vishayas traigunya misraigunyascha. So the Vedas, which deal with the three modes of material nature, and those portions of the Vedas which deal with transcendence beyond the modes of material nature, they have as a subject matter the three modes of material nature and transcendence. Tatra tvam tu nistraigunyo bhava. But you transcend the three modes of material nature. You take advantage of that portion of the Veda which teaches transcendence, which teaches pure bhakti. Nirgunaya mad bhakti eva tri gunatma kebhyaha tebhyaha nishkranto bhava. By taking shelter of transcendental devotional service to me, you become free from the other Vedic activities of karma, jnana, etc., which are within the three modes of material nature. Tata eva nirdvandvaha gunamaya mana apamana adi rahitaha. And then you will be free from the dualities of material existence, such as honor, dishonor, etc. Atayeva nityaihi sattvaihi pranibhihi mad bhaktaireva saha tishtati iti tatha saha. Therefore, you should stay with the nitya sattvas. Notice the word nitya sattvastha. Nitya sattvastha. Nitya sattvastha means in a pure state of spiritual existence. Nitya means eternal. Sattva means existence. Sattva also means living being. Stha means situated. So nitya sattvastha can mean in a pure state of spiritual existence. It can also mean in the association of eternal living beings. So he has translated this as atayeva nityaihi sattvaihi pranibhihi mad bhaktaihi, which means my devotees. My devotees are eternal living beings because they don't die. They are transcendental. Those who are engaged in pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are fully transcendental. So they are not living in this world, they are part of that world, spiritual world. So you stay with them. You be with them. Nityam sattvagunastho bhaveti vyakhyayam nistraigunyo bhaveti virodhasya. Now there are some people who translate this as sattva, they take it to mean the material mode of goodness. You should always stay in the material mode of goodness, because sattva can also refer to sattva guna. So he takes that interpretation and he says that interpretation cannot be accepted, because that will contradict the previous statement, nistraigunyo bhava. Krishna just said become transcendental to these three modes. Why will he say stay eternally within the material mode of goodness? So that interpretation cannot be accepted. Alabjalabho yoga labdhasya rakshanam kshemas tadrahitaha. To obtain that which has not been obtained, that is called yoga. And to protect which has been obtained is called kshema. You become free from both of them. Mad bhakti rasaswada vashadeva tayor an anusandhanat yoga kshema bhamyaham iti bhaktavatsalena mayaiva tadbhara vahana. Because when my pure devotees are under the sway of the taste, the rasa, the taste coming from my pure devotional service, then they forget about their yoga and kshema. They forget about what they are supposed to get. They forget about what they are supposed to preserve. They forget about these things. And because they are like this, therefore, because I am affectionate to my pure devotees, I say, yoga kshemam vahamyaham. I take care of the yoga kshema of such pure devotees. This is a statement that comes in the 9th chapter. Therefore, I accept the responsibility to take care of them. Atmavan, Maddatta buddhi yuktaha. Atmavan, be situated in the self, established in the self, means you become fixed with the intelligence that I am giving. And then he now he points out on what basis he is saying that jnana karma, they are within the three modes of material nature, and that bhakti is transcendental. This is a long section, so what I'll do is I'll just read through it and I'll just summarize. I'll not translate it. Atra nisraigunya traigunya yor vivechanam yaduktam ekadashe. This has been stated in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Madarpanam nishphalam sattvikam nijakarma tat rajasam phalasankalpam himsa prayadi tamasam. When you engage in Vedic prescribed activities, either to offer them to me or without desiring the fruit assigned to those activities, that is in the mode of goodness. When you perform Vedic prescribed activities with the desire to enjoy the fruits, that is in the mode of passion. And when you perform the activities which are which inflict a lot of violence upon various living entities, then that is in the mode of ignorance. Nishpalam veti naimittikam nijakkarma palakanksha rahitam vityartaha kaivalyam sattvikam jnanam rajovaikalpikam tu yat prakritam tamasam jnanam mannishtam nirgunam smritam. Realization of the soul, that is called jnana, and that is in the mode of goodness. Then you have other types of realization of multiple material plurality, which is in the mode of passion, and you are completely materialistic conception. When you have that, is in the mode of ignorance. But realization of my personality, my existence, that is transcendental. Vananta sattiko vaso gramo rajasa uchyate tamasam dyuta sadanam manniketam tu nirgunam. The forest is in the mode of goodness, a village is in the mode of passion, and a place where gambling and similar sinful activities are executed is in the mode of ignorance, and my temple is in the mode of is transcendental to the three modes. Sattvika karako sangi ragantho rajasa smrita tamasa smriti vibhrashto nirguno maddapashraya. A personality who has no material attachments is in the mode of goodness. A person who is blinded by material desires is in the mode of passion. And a person who is totally bewildered in his memory about his duties is in the mode of ignorance. And a personality who has fully taken shelter of me is transcendental to the three modes. Sattvika, dhyatmiki, shraddha, karma shraddha, tu rajasi, tamasya dharmeya shraddha, mat sevayam tu nirguna. One who has spiritual faith while engaging in Vedic activities, that faith is in the mode of goodness. Faith in faith in Vedic karma, and that it will produce fruit, is called karma shraddha, and that is in the mode of passion. Faith in irreligiosity, in activities outside of Vedic rules, that faith is in the mode of ignorance. Faith in my devotion service to me is transcendental to the three modes. Patyam put Patyam putta manayastam aharyam sattvikam smritam rajasam chendriyam preshtam tamasam chartida shuchi chakaran man niveditam tu nirgunam iti swami charananam vyakhyanam. And when you have foodstuffs in the mode of foodstuffs which are pure, which don't lead to disease, these are in the mode of goodness. Foodstuffs which are very pleasing to the senses are in the mode of passion. Foodstuffs which lead to a lot of misery are in the mode of ignorance. And the word cha, which means etc., appears here. That etc. stands for foodstuff which is offered to me and which is transcendental. This is the explanation of Srila Sridhar Swami. Sattvikam sukham atmottham vishayottham tu rajasam tamasam mohadainyottham nirgunam maddapashrayam. Happiness in the mode of goodness is coming from the soul, spirit soul, as different from the body. Happiness coming from sense objects is in the mode of passion. Happiness which is based on bewilderment, depression, etc., these are coming from the mode of ignorance, whereas the happiness coming from taking shelter of me, that is purely transcendental. इति अन्तेन ग्रन्थेन त्रैगुण्यवस्तून्यपि प्रदर्श्य निर्गुणस्य सम्यक् निस्त्रैगुण्यता सिद्ध्यर्थं निर्गुणयैव भक्त्या स्वस्मिन् कथञ्चित् स्थितस्य त्रैगुण्यस्य निजयोर् अपि उक्तः तदनन्तरमेव यथा द्रव्यं देशस्तथा कालो ज्ञानं कर्म च कारकः शब्दावास्था कृतिर्निष्ठा त्रैगुण्यस्सर्व एव हि सर्वे गुणमयः भावा पुरुषाव्यक्ताधिष्ठिता दृष्टं श्रुतम् अनुध्यातं बुद्ध्या वा पुरुषशभ एता संश्रुतयः पुंसो गुणकर्मनिबन्धना येनेमे निर्जिताः सौम्य गुणाजीवेन चित्तजा भक्तियोगेन मन्निष्ठो मद्भावाय प्रपद्यते इति. सो कृष्ण states in the 11th canto various categories of material existence, and for everything he is pointing out what is transcendental in relationship to him. And then he concludes that if you engage in pure bhakti yoga, then you come to my platform, which is beyond the three modes of material nature. Tasmad bhaktyaiva nirgunaya traigunya jayo na anyatha. Therefore we understand that only by engaging in transcendental devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, bhakti yoga, you can get beyond the three modes of material nature, not by any other way. Atrapi agre katam chaitam streen guna nati vartate iti prashne vakshiyate mam cha yog vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate saguna samati tyaitar brahmabhuyaya kalpate iti. Here also, in this book, this very same point is made in chapter 14. Krishna delineates the three modes of material nature in Bhagavad Gita, and Arjuna asks a question, how can we get out of the three modes of material nature? So Krishna answers 14.26 that when you engage in spotless devotional service to me, spotless devotional service to me, then you get beyond the three modes of material nature. So from this we understand that spotless devotional service or transcendental devotional service is actually beyond the three modes of material nature. Swami Charananam Vyakhyacha Chakaro Atra Avadharanartha Mahameva Parveshuram Avyabhicharena Bhakti Yogena Yassevate Ityesha. So Vishnu Chakravarti's point is that if you engage in transcendental Bhakti Yoga, which means pure devotional service, this is a very important point. If we surrender to devotees who execute pure devotional service to him, then Krishna is saying, you can get out of the three modes of material nature and no other way. That point comes up. Next, 46. Yavan artha udapane sarvata samplutodake tavan sarveshu vedeshu brahmanasya vijanata. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he points out that small reservoirs of water are called udapanas, and a great reservoir of water is called samplutodaka. कूपादि क्षुद्र क्षुद्र जलाशय के उदपान बोले एवं अति बृहत् जलाशय के संप्लुतोदक बोले एक्टी एक्टी कूपे स्नान वस्त्र प्रक्षालन इत्यादि कर्म पृथक पृथक कृत हो किंतु संप्लुतोदके समस्त कार्य सुंदर रूपे पाया होया थाके. यू नीड सेपरेट वेल्स फॉर टेकिंग बाथ फॉर वॉशिंग क्लोथ्स एटसेट्रा. हाउएवर इफ यू हैव अ ग्रेट रिजर्वायर ऑफ वाटर ऑल दीज एक्टिविटीज कैन बी वंडरफुली ब्यूटिफुली एग्जीक्यूटेड. वेदशास्त्रे एक देशे एक एक्टी देवतार विषय लिखित होया तद्दारा जय कार्य पावा जाय तहा उल्लिखित होया छे. देर आर डिफरेंट पोर्शंस ऑफ द वेदस वेर इट इज स्टेटेड वेर देर इज इन्फॉर्मेशन अबाउट वर्शिपिंग ए स्पेसिफिक वैदिक डीटी एंड इफ यू एंगेज इन दोज एक्टिविटीज यू अटेन सर्टन फ्रूट्स एंड दैट इज स्पेसिफाइड देयर. किंतु समस्त वेद विचार करिले एकमात्र भगवान जे आमी आमार उपासना द्वारा समस्त फल लाभ करा जाए. बट आई एम द सुप्रीम पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉड हेड. इफ यू डेलिब्रेट ऑन इफ यू एनालाइज द एंटायर बॉडी ऑफ वेद यू विल अंडरस्टैंड दैट एंड इफ यू वर्शिप मी देन यू गेट ऑल द फ्रूट्स दैट यू गेट बाय वर्शिपिंग दीज डेमिगॉड्स. यही रूप वेद तात्पर्य ब्राह्मण एरा स्थिर कोरिया चेन दिस हैज बीन डिटर्मिंड बाय ब्राह्मणस हु हैव अंडरस्टूड the purport of the entire Veda. Jahadeer Eknishtan Shichayatmika Buddhi Tahara Swabhavatai Ekmatra Bhagavad Upasanae Kuriya Thake. Those whose Buddhi is Vyavasayatmika, is fixed on one, on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, naturally they only engage in worship of the Supreme Lord. Anta kim vaktavyam nishkamasya nirgunasya bhakti yogasya mahatmyam yas kiyai ram yas यस्यैव आरम्भणमात्रे अपि नाशप्रत्यवायो नस्तः स्वल्पमात्रेण अपि कृतार्थता इत्येकादशे अपि उद्धवाय अपि वक्ष्यते न ह्यङ्गोपक्रमध्वंसो उपक्रमे ध्वंसो मद्धर्मस्य उद्धवाण्डु अपि मया व्यवसितः सम्यक् निर्गुणत्वादनाशिष इति किन्तु सकामो भक्तियोगोपि व्यवसायात्मिका बुद्धि शब्देन उच्यते इति दृष्टान्तेन साधयति यावान् इति वाट् टु स्पीक् आफ् निष्काम भक्तियोगः विच् इस् ट्रान्सेण्डेण्टल् विच् मीन्स् विदौट् एनि मेटीरियल् डिसैर् युर् एक्सिक्यूटिङ्ग् भक्तियोगः ईवन् सकाम भक्तियोगः इस् सो ग्रेट् that you don't have to do any activity other than bhakti yoga even to attain material results. In other words, sakama bhakti yoga means you are fully engaged in bhakti yoga, but you have some desire, like Dhruva Maharaj. You know, he is worshipping the deity form of the Supreme Lord for 6 months. He stopped everything else in life. That's the only thing he did. For what? To get a kingdom. This is an example of sakama bhakti. Sakama bhakti. Nishkama karma means I am engaged in a prescribed Vedic material activity desiring spiritual goal. Sakama bhakti means I am engaged in nightfold devotional service such as hearing about the Supreme Lord, chanting about the Supreme Lord. This is a regular devotional service, but doing it with a material motive, materially motivated devotional service. But it has to be inoffensive. It cannot be with offenses. It has to be inoffensive. And without sinful activities, etc., with the pious activities also. So even that is so exalted, even that can be called Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. And he accomplishes this by giving an example. Yavan iti, with the words beginning Yavan. Udapane iti jatya ekavachanam, udapaneshu kupeshu yavan artha iti. Here, udapana is used in the singular, but that is jatya ekavachanam. He is referring to all purposes served by a small well. Yavan artha udapane. Udapane is 7.1. It's not 7.2 or 7.3, it's 7.1. In a well of water. Seventh case, singular. Now, Chakravarti points out that here, in a well of water actually refers to in many wells of water. Because there is a rule that you refer to a single person when referring to an entire group. It's like when we say, man is very advanced now. That doesn't refer to any one man, even though you're saying in singular. You're referring to an entire group. So the group can be in singular, even though you're referring to many units within that group who are in plural. So here, jatya ekavachanam is applied. Here, in a well of water means in wells of water. Kashchit kupaha shauchak karmarthakam. Some well, a certain well, maybe for the sake of cleaning, washing. Kashchit dantad dhavanarthakam. And some other well may be dedicated for giving water for brushing your teeth. Kashchit vastra dhavana adiarthakam. Whereas some other well may be dedicated for washing clothes. Kashchit keshadi marjanarthakaha. Some of them are meant for washing your hair. Women have long hair, sometimes they need. So some wells are dedicated for that purpose. Kashchit snanarthakaha. Some well, certain well may be for the sake of taking bath. Kashchit panarthakaha. Some of them are for drinking water. Ityevam sarvatah sarveshu udapaneshu yavan arthaha yavanti prayojanani ityartha. So there are different purposes which are accomplished by different wells. Samplutodake mahajalashaye sarovare api tavanevartha tasmin ekasminneva shauchadik karmasiddhehe. And all of those purposes can be accomplished if you go to a large pond, a large reservoir of water. If you get a reservoir of water and you can do all these things there, because the reservoir of water is so big, different people can take, they can take advantage of different parts of that water, the sarovar. So all these activities can be accomplished without any conflict. Ekasmineva shauchadi karma siddhe, because it is possible to do all these activities using one reservoir of water. Kincha tattat kupeshu prithak prithak paribhramana shramena sarovaretu tam vinaiva. And in a well, if you want to do all these purposes, if you want to accomplish all these purposes, you have to go to one well, then go to another well, then go to another well, then go to another well. You have to go to so many different wells. So there's a lot of labor involved. However, in a pond, you don't have to go to so many different wells, so many different reservoirs of water. In one reservoir of water, you're getting everything. One stop. It's a one-stop solution. तथा कूपेषु वीररसजलेन सरोवरे तु सुरसजलेन एव इत्यपि विशेषो द्रष्टव्यः. You should also consider that in wells you don't get tasty water, whereas in a pond, in a large reservoir of pond, you get very tasty water. एवं सर्वेषु वेदेषु तत्तद् देवता आराधनेन यावन्तः अर्थाः तावन्तः एकस्य भगवत आराधनेन जानतः विज्ञस्य ब्राह्मणस्य इति ब्रह्मवेदं वेति इति ब्राह्मणः तस्य विजानतः. So in different portions of all the Vedas, there are worship of various Vedic deities by which you attain these purposes. So all those purposes can be accomplished by worshipping one Supreme Lord. Who can do that? To a person who knows, vijanataha, which means vigyasya, a person who knows the purpose behind all the Vedas, and he has to be a brahmana. What is a brahmana? Brahmana comes from the word brahma. Brahma means Veda, shabda brahma. So one who knows the Veda is called a brahmana. So a person who knows the purport of Vedas, who specifically understands the purport of the Vedas, he will engage in bhakti. Veda gyatvepi veda tatparyam bhaktim visheshatah jnanatah vijanatah. Notice the word vijanatah. Vijanatah is V plus jnanatah. V is a prefix which means specifically. So he specifically knows about the potency of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. The idea is this. In Vedic culture, whatever you want to get, you get it by worshipping a specific allotted Vedic deity, and you pray. It consists of Vara Prarthana and Tushti Sadhana. These are the two elements of all aspects of Vedic culture. Let us say one needs to have a wife, or let us say one needs to have children, which is even more common. One wants to have a child. So one goes to a specific Vedic deity who is allotted for that purpose. So you engage in first of all, you beg, my goddess, or my god, whoever that deity may be, please give me a child. So, Varaprarthana, you're begging for a boon. Then not only that, you have to engage in Tushti Sadhana. You have to engage in an activity which will please that deity. So the whole system is built upon this. It's built upon humility. It's not like the modern world where people think, I can get it, I can do it. You just have to maintain confidence. You got to be self-confident and you can do it. Vedic culture has no place for these things. It is not built upon this. Of course, depression is not allowed. Depression is tamasic. But self-confidence is considered rajasic, foolish. Rather, the system is one of humility. You go as a beggar and you beg various Vedic deities, please give me this. Vishwanatha Chakravarti's point is, instead of going and asking all these Vedic deities, you go and ask Krishna. Here also you have to beg. In fact, we are beggars. Even those who are spiritualists, those who are seeking pure devotional service, even we beg. We beg, please engage me in your devotional service. This is how Prabhupada explained the meaning of the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna mantra means, my dear Radharani, my dear Lord Krishna, please engage me in your devotion. He's begging. So in Vedic culture, everybody is trained to be a beggar. Not an inactive beggar. You cannot just beg. You also have to do an activity which is pleasing to the person whom you are begging. So, Varaprarthana and Tushti Sadhana, two things you have to do. We also do that. We pray to Krishna, my dear Lord, please engage me in your devotion service, and we engage in his devotion service also to make him happy. So, in Vedic culture, that is reflected everywhere. This is all pervasive. All pervasive. So this is the Vedic concept of materialistic life even. Material life is not accomplished by your own strength. By the sweat of my brow I will get it. This is all nonsense. From Vedic perspective, there is no mode of ignorance, tamasic. In the mode of passion, one comes to understand how the world works. The world works by pleasing higher authorities and begging. This is how you accomplish material success. You want sense enjoyment, whatever you want. You please allotted superior authorities who are suppliers basically. They are suppliers for such types of pleasures. And they will give you that. That comes everywhere. Even for students of Vedic culture, students in Vedic culture, materialistic people, they pray to Saraswati and they do activities which please Saraswati. Everywhere it comes. You have to do this. This is a fundamental point. You worship a certain superior authority in a such a way. You have to do everything that will please that person. Like for Shiva, you have to offer bale leaves and a certain type of water, a certain vrata on such and such a weekday. On this day you worship sun god, on that day you worship Lord Shiva, on this day you worship Devi. So you have to do everything that's required to make that deity happy. And you have to pay. And they will give you. So this is the system of Vedic material life. This is Sakama. Vishnu Chakravarti's point is, why you have to go to all these different deities and do it? Come and ask one Supreme Lord. He will give you everything. You will have to go to so many different deities. Like going from one well to another well. Go to that one pond, one large sarovar pond. You get everything. And the water is also sweet. So you engage in the sweet process of devotional service. Give up every other activity. Give up sinful activities. Give up pious activities. And you simply ask the Supreme Personality of Godhead, make him happy. Do whatever will make him happy. What is Krishna like? Krishna likes that we engage in ninefold devotional service. So you do that. You make him happy. You become happy. If Krishna becomes happy, he'll give you everything. This is Dhruva Niti. This is the style of Dhruva Maharaj. Yatha Advitiya Skande, as it is stated in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Brahma Varchasa Kamastu Yajeta Brahmana Patim Indram Indriya Kamastu Praja Kama Prajapatim Devi Mayam to Shri Kama Ityadyuktva. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami gives a long list of which deity you have to worship for what. If you have which desire. So like he says, if you desire to become, to get Brahma Tejas, then you worship the Lord of the Vedas. If you if you want sense enjoyment or good powerful senses, you worship Lord Indra. If you want many children, Praja, then you worship the progenitors, Prajapatis. If you want beauty, then you worship Maya Devi. And so on. There's a long list. And then he concludes, Akama sarvakamo va moksha kama udara dhihi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param iti. He says, finally he says, whether you have no personal desire or you have all sorts of personal desires or you have the desire to become liberated from material life, an intelligent person will exclusively engage in intense devotional service and worship the Supreme Lord. Shukadeva Goswami. And then he explains, Meghadya Mishrasya Saura Kiranasya Tivratvam Iva Bhakti Yogasya Jnana Karma Dhyamishratvam Tivratvam Gyayam. When he says he was engaged in intense devotional service, it means you do devotional service without doing Jnana, Karma, etc. Don't mix it with other Vedic processes. Do Shuddha Bhakti, pure Bhakti. And just as we say, intense sun ray. What does it mean, intense sun ray? Intense sun ray means sun ray without any cloud. When you don't have any clouds, then the sun rays are very intense. So like that, when you do Bhakti Yoga, without mixing it with any other process, don't mix it with the Vedic process of Jnana. Don't mix it with the Vedic process of Karma. You exclusively engage in direct devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As taught in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction. That is what we refer to as Bhakti, Swarupa Siddha Bhakti, Mukhya Bhakti Yoga. Atra Bahubhyo Bahukama Siddhir Riti Sarvatha Bahubuddhitvam Eva. Now, because you are approaching, you have so many material desires, So then you have bahubuddhi, your intelligence is played out in so many matters. Suppose you desire sense gratification, so many different things to desire. So your intelligence will be splayed, right? So how can you call this vyavasayatmika buddhi? Vyavasayatmika buddhi means intelligence is single fixed. So he explains, ekasmad bhagavata eva sarvakama siddhir ritti amshena eka buddhitvam eva vishaya sadgunyadhyayam. Because for no matter how many material desires you may have, you are surrendered to only one person, and therefore there is an element of oneness, singleness, single focusedness is there, and therefore this can also be partially considered to be vyavasayatmika buddhi. And also because you are approaching the right person, you are approaching the right person, you are approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who anyway empowers the demigods to provide material desires to their worshippers. So you are approaching the right person. Then karmanyevadhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phalahetur bhur mate sangostva karmani. Bhaktivinoda's points have already been brought out by Srila Prabhupada. Few points I'll bring out. Karma teen prakar, arthat nitya karma, naimitika karma, kamya karma. Tanmadhye, kamya karma ho avangal janak. Jahara kamya karma kurya thaken, tahara karma palayar hetu hon. Karma is divided into three types: nitya karma, naimitika karma, and kamya karma. Amongst them, kamya karma is also inauspicious. Those who engage in kamya karma, they become causes for, they become agents or causes for the fruits of the karma. অতএব আমি তোমার মঙ্গলের জন্য বলে দিচ্ছি যে তুমি কাম্যকর্ম আশ্রয় করো, তা কর্মফলের হেতু হো না। সো ডিজায়ারিং ইউর অসপিশিয়াসনেস আই এম টেলিং ইউ, ডু নট এনগেজ ইন কাম্যকর্ম, বিকজ দেন ইউ উইল বিকম দ্য কজ অফ দ্য ফ্রুটস অফ কর্ম। স্বধর্ম বিহিত কর্ম করিতে তোমার অধিকার আছে, ইউ হ্যাভ আ রাইট টু এনগেজ ইন ইউর স্বধর্ম উইচ ইজ নিত্য নৈমিত্তিক কর্ম, কিন্তু কোন কর্মফলে তোমার অধিকার নেই। বাট ইউ ডোন্ট অ্যাকচুয়ালি হ্যাভ আ রাইট টু গেট দ্য ফ্রুট। The point is, you are supposed to engage in this activity for spiritual advancement. You are not supposed to engage in this activity to get the material fruit. That is not your, you cannot claim that. You can only claim that I am supposed to do this duty for spiritual advancement. Jahara bhakti jog avalamban kore tahader pakhe sharir jatra nirvaher janna nitya naimittik karma svikrita. Those who are engaged in bhakti yoga to maintain the body and soul together, they have to, you know, they accept nitya naimittika karma. So that is why I'm saying this is bhakti marga, and notice that there is karma, but it is still considered to be bhakti marga. It is not considered bhakti plus karma marga, because you're only adding one thing, you're only increasing bhakti. Karma you are accepting to sustain yourself, and here also we are engaged in nitya naimittika karma, in duties, obligations, family obligations. For instance, for a married man, it is his duty to take care of his wife and children and so on. So it is naimittika, occasional, or it may be nitya, daily. So certain duties are daily, certain duties are occasional. So those who are taking up bhakti yoga, they accept these two, nitya and naimittika. Yeah?
Yeah, my question was regarding the Dharma Shastra. I have seen in some Brahmin families conflict regarding a practice which is given more importance than even chanting or daily worship. That is, you know, when the girl goes through a menstruation cycle, she is considered unholy and should not touch anywhere, should not go to the kitchen, things like that.
Correct.
Now, of course, I did not find the mention of such a thing in Gita or first three cantos of Bhagavatam.
No, but these rules are there, that an unclean person should not enter the deity room. Just like after you pass stool, you become unclean. So there are various causes for uncleanliness. So when a woman is in her menstrual period, she is unclean.
So that means she should not touch anywhere in the house?
No, there are deity related.
So only deity, should not touch the deity, otherwise anything else.
No, anything deity related.
Right.
deity related. Like men would not eat foodstuffs cooked by a contaminated lady. So they would cook themselves and they would make arrangements. So children used to cook. In a proper family, there's so many people, some 10-15 people. So unclean ladies, you know, they don't cook. I've seen, even in Mayapur, there are some cultured Indian ladies. The daughter will cook, mother will cook, the woman's mother will cook, the husband will cook.
Okay, so cooking, not cooking and not touching the lady. But what about touching other people in the house or touching other things in the house?
It's just like when you're in an unclean state, you don't. Just like suppose I go and shave, okay, I'm unclean, so I'm not allowed to go around touching things, because when I touch, what happens is it involves a sort of psychological fingerprint which is going to affect people's minds. These things affect mind, so this consideration of cleanliness, uncleanliness, that is explained in the 11th canto of the Bhagavata. Corresponding to what can affect our mind, certain activities are described and pointed out to be clean and unclean. So these are there, it's really there.
But yeah,
no, also, but these the rules, which rules of Dharma Shastra should be applied, which are not meant to be applied, these have to be carefully understood from a liberated Acharya. Non-liberated Vaishnavas may not be able to settle all these things. What to speak of non-liberated non-Vaishnavas? They can't even understand any of these things. So Prabhupada has given some instructions. He's given some hints. Like in Mayapur, Prabhupada wanted very high standards. So Prabhupada in Mayapur, he was a little bit more conservative. In the West, Prabhupada generally wasn't talking about any of these things. Prabhupada also told the devotees, if I start telling all the rules, regulations, you'll all faint. So I'm purposefully avoiding. And he also had a plan that through the generations, further and further rules should come up. Many of these things can only be accomplished from training since childhood. Childhood impressions arrest you for your whole life. So Prabhupada wanted that girls born to devotees, they be trained in these things. So that will be their samskara for whole life. Similarly, boys also. He wanted certain training to be given. So we don't have to unnecessarily get too much worried about some of these things.
We don't have to get worried. I see serious conflicts in families, you know, about this. Because the modern girls or modern mothers don't want to follow this, and while the patriarchal families, the father would
try. Yeah, at least, you know, I'll simply say, just chant Hare Krishna, follow four regulative principles, avoid the offenses to the chanting, associate with devotees who are more advanced, serve them, read Prabhupada's books. Yeah. Let everything else be crazy, weird from the Vedic point of view. At least do this much, and this will yield the fruit.
And the other families who are not doing any of the three things you said, chanting, or anything, but they follow that very strictly.
No, but first of all, if you speak like that, according to Dharma Shastras, one is not even supposed to leave Bharata Bhumi. The moment you leave Bharata Bhumi, you are fallen. The only prayaschitta is to die. So first of all, because they are Papa Bhumi. Outside India, which is Punya Bhumi.
Even in India, there
are even in India, these things are going on. But anyway, there are hundreds of rules. The primary rules, if they are not followed, what is the use of following secondary rules?
Yeah.
Like a girl is supposed to be married before puberty. So why can't they follow that? They won't follow that. They will ridicule that. They'll say, oh, nonsense. But when the girl becomes pregnant, when she sleeps with the boy, that is a tolerable thing. That's a modern phenomenon. You have to be understanding. They'll say, so how is the, isn't the, you know, very few people have opposed these kind of fundamental issues. Like Prabhupada spoke about it. Okay, Prabhupada said, girl should be married before puberty. The only other person who I know who has done it was Chandrasekharendra Saraswati, who lived for about 100 years, the Shankaracharya representative from Kanchipuram. He lived for some 103 years or so. He is the only other person, to my knowledge, who had the courage to speak about this in India. In India, even spiritualists don't talk about something like this. They are too frightened to say something so much against the modern worldview.
So is it the influence of Christianity or?
Plenty of things. Influence of Western civilization. Influence of Western civilization. But this, but even in Europe it was like that. Romeo Juliet drama. What is Romeo, what is Juliet's age? 16.
14.
14 or something, and it grows up to 15 or something.
Yeah, she grows up to 15, she's 14.
That's the age when they are trying to find her married. She's supposed to be married at that age. She's a marriageable girl. Shakespeare was writing this in 1600s or 1700s. So at that time it was acceptable. But the modern world is, you know, they're trying to become so smart that we are the intelligent people. Everybody else is wrong. The past is despicable. And now we're becoming civilized. All over the world it was despicable. India was despicable. Europe was despicable. Dark age. They call it the dark age. But from our perspective, it is practically the reverse. It now is the darkest age. Previously, it was much better. With all this technology, this is all technologically sophisticated animals. People previously had marriage vows, they respected things like this. And now where marriage is becoming an imagination, even in India. Dark age now. It requires courage.
Dark age, what
do
you say?
Dark age.
Dark age, okay.
It's a very dark age. Even India, all kinds of things. Girls who are 15 years old, they have lost their virginity. In cities.
How? Law doesn't allow them to marry, isn't it? Minimum age is 18.
Minimum age is 18. 18. 18 also, who marries? They think it's outrageous to. It's an outrageous proposal to get a girl married when she's 18. They want to extend it to 21. There are people who try to push it up to 21.
So they want a girl to be properly married.
Well, ridiculous. You know, a girl should be married when she is at the right time. Prabhupada explained this. Prabhupada took very heavy stand on this. A girl should be married pre-puberty, but it should be done very carefully. It should not be done some whimsically or foolishly.
Pre-puberty means before she starts getting menstrual cycle.
Yeah. But it should be done very, very carefully. If it cannot be done like that, it should not be done. If it cannot be done carefully, it should not be done. That's a fact. But ideally it should be done like that. Because childhood impressions stay whole life. It's a system. The whole Vedas are united when they talk about these subjects. And Prabhupada also spoke like that. At least if we can't do it, at least we should consider that our great-granddaughters should be able to do it. Now, our daughters, they marry when they're 25. Crazy. Okay, her daughter can probably marry when she's 23. Her daughter can probably marry when she's 21. Her daughter can maybe marry when she's 18. And maybe her granddaughter can marry when she's 15.
In India, the legal age for marriage is gradually going up.
That's what I'm saying. From 18, they're trying to move up.
18 to 19.
To
21. We already done.
They're trying.
Earlier it was 15, then they made it 18, and then 21.
Now they're...
Is it to reduce the population or something?
Or is it no. Because the whole idea is that women need to be empowered.
Why do they do that? Because even in England it is 16.
So all so many things they are trying to do. It's a challenge, it's a great challenge. But if we follow dharma strictly, the way Prabhupada has specified, and we very carefully follow it, then one will be able to follow these types of rules, regulations over time. But we should maintain the vision. We should not, now we may say the girl should marry when she's 21, fine. But I will not say that your great-granddaughter also should marry when she is 21. You should move in that direction. Over the generations, you should move in that direction. At least that much people should accept. Over the generations, at least people should accept. Okay, we'll stop with this. These comments are very important. That's why I spent some time. Sometimes I think that we should extend this from 90 minutes to 2 hours. Then I'll be able to give justice to this.
Some to wish 2 sessions, 12 sessions of 1 hour or 50 minutes. Like 50 minutes break and then 50 minutes.
Morning, what time can you, when is the earliest you can start? We can do like that actually. We can have from 9 to 11 with the final.